If you had to describe our current culture in one word, what would it be? The options are many. Good arguments could be made for a number of suggested tags. But I find myself in agreement with Eugene Peterson as he writes, "We live in a nation of complainers and a society of addicts. Everywhere we turn, we hear complaints. I can't spend my money the way I want. I can't spend my time the way I want. I can't be myself. I'm under the control of others all the time." And everywhere we meet the addicts, addicted to alcohol and drugs, to compulsive work habits, and to obsessive compulsion. A society of addicts is Peterson's way of summarizing our culture. Maybe we do live in an age of addiction. Now, I'm not suggesting we somehow invented addictive behavior. It's been going on ever since Adam and Eve took the fruit from the forbidden tree. The Bible says everyone who sins is a slave to sin, which is just another way of saying we're addicted to something. It just seems that in our society, we invent things to get addicted to. We have the common addictions of alcohol and drug abuse, but we have addictions now to gambling. We have addictions to pornography, addictions to video games, addictions to just about everything imaginable. We are consumed by our compulsive behavior. Now, what do we mean by addiction? One resource defines it as any thinking or behavior that is habitual, repeated, and very difficult or even impossible to control, regardless of the consequences. Many people that are addicted know that what they're doing is harmful, and yet they can't break that cycle, can't break those chains. That same resource goes on to add, perhaps it is not surprising that addictions have become a major health hazard worldwide and has been called the greatest threat to our nation's health. One particular addiction, though, doesn't get the negative attention of some of these other compulsions, and that is the addiction of work. Workaholism has become the acceptable addiction in our society. In fact, it has become a respectable idol. A person can sacrifice everything else, their family, their friends, even their personal health, on the altar of work and actually be praised for it. Actually be rewarded for showing commitment, determination, and having the right stuff. And I think it's a profound tragedy. Work was intended by God as a wonderful means of serving Him. And I'm not at all suggesting today that work is a problem. Work was created before the fall of man. It's not part of the curse. Now, our work has been affected by the curse, but work itself is actually rewarding. God Himself is a worker. He created us in His image, and we should work. But He did not create us to be machines that only work. And He Himself gave us a pattern for how to live that includes taking a break regularly from our work routine so that we might enjoy life, that we might enjoy Him. Work was never meant to be an end in itself. It's certainly not meant to be an idol. Our work may express who we are, but it should never become who we are. And so this morning I'd like to address the stress fracture of overwork and constant fatigue. I dare say that among Christians, workaholism is accepted. Sometimes it's even expected. Just this past week, I read in a resource that I normally trust, "The knowledge of this demand for diligent labor spurs the excellent minister on to serious efforts. No wonder Henry Martin, the missionary to India, exclaimed, 'Now let me burn out for God.' Because of his diligent hard work as a missionary to the American Indians, David Brainerd was dead before he was 30. Ministers of God are engaged in an eternal work with the destinies of men's souls at stake. The urgency of that work drives them on through weariness, loneliness, and struggle. J. Oswald Sanders wrote, "If he is unwilling to pay the price of fatigue for his leadership, he will always be mediocre. True leadership always exacts a heavy toll on the whole man, and the more effective his leadership is, the higher the price to be paid." I read that and I thought, is this really what we're all about? Is that really what God calls us to? And notice here, he's speaking to ministers. I mean, that, I felt like that was pointed right at me. And we hear this old cliche, "I'd rather burn out than rust out." Well, either way, you're out. And I don't believe that tiredness is next to godliness. I don't believe that the sign of spiritual maturity is working yourself to a frazzle. I believe that has come more from our culture rather than our Bible. But we've allowed it to get in, and we've allowed ourselves to be sucked in to this mindset that what I am is what I do. Our whole identity can get tied up into our work. Chuck Swindoll writes, "We've been programmed to think that fatigue is next to godliness. The more exhausted we are, or at least the more exhausted we look, the more spiritual we are, and the more we earn God's smile of approval. We bury all thoughts of enjoying life, for we know that the truly committed Christians are those who work, work, work. Preferably with great intensity. As a result, we have become a generation of people who worship our work, work at our play, and play at our worship." I think he's right on. And what I want to address this morning is those who worship their work. Those who draw their own identity and self-worth by what they do, and who work themselves to a frazzle, thinking that that's the only way to serve God. It takes a toll on our relationships. It takes a toll on our health. Fatigue is a major stress fracture for many. Well, how do we know if we have fallen into this subtle addiction of workaholism? What are the symptoms? I would suggest a few. Chronic muscle tension in your neck, your shoulders, and your back. Recurring tension headaches. Disturbance of the digestive system that results in all kinds of problems. Chronic sleeplessness. You can't get to sleep, you can't stay asleep. Persistent fatigue. You wake up in the morning as tired or more so than you were when you went to bed. And a loss of enthusiasm for life. Those things that you normally enjoy, those things you could get excited about, now it's just kind of, whatever. More serious symptoms would include intense depression, maybe only lasting a few days, but it occurs every few months. Unusual difficulty getting going in the morning. You really have to put forth an effort just to get out of bed, just to get out the front door. Being overcome by great tiredness when there is a letdown. You finally get a day off and you can't even do anything at all. Strange body sensations tingling up and down the arms or across the chest. Strange aches in joints and muscles. Exhaustion that occurs very easily and frequently. And even feelings of panic that are triggered by activity or exercise. These are some more serious symptoms that there might be a real problem. Here's some questions I'd like you to just answer within yourself that might point that this would be an issue. Do I feel that my work is my main source of identity? Do I dive into details and lists but have difficulty starting essentials? Do I have difficulty pacing my time? Do I have difficulty being satisfied with the final result of my work? Do I feel that my work is controlling me? Do I make sure that others know how much and how long I work? Do I resent others for not working as hard as I think they should? Do I feel guilty when I relax or have fun? Am I often fatigued? Do I put work above those closest to me? Do I primarily talk about what I do for a living? Do I fear others might think I don't work hard enough? Do I have difficulty saying no when asked to do something else? Do I feel that the more I work, the more I will please God? Do I have more devotion to my work than I do to my Lord? If you answered yes to a number of those questions, this message is for you. Now, what do we mean by workaholism? What's the diagnosis? It's the compulsion to overwork in order to gain self-worth or to avoid intimacy with others. Now, I'm sure there are probably those who work way more than they should just because they don't want to go home or they're trying to avoid people that they'd rather not be around. My guess, though, is that most people that fall under this category, it's because they're trying to gain self-worth. They're trying to build their identity on what they do. In many ways, workaholics use work like a drug to feel better about themselves, to feel in control of their lives. Unlike alcoholics or drug addicts, overworkers are respected in society. They're encouraged to continue their addiction. And this affirmation greatly intensifies the addictive power of this behavior. According to Brian Robinson, not the assistant fire chief in Kinney, by the way, but this man was a former workaholic himself, and he studies this area. Says this social acceptance makes it a particularly deceptive disorder. He says work addicts often have thicker denial systems than those suffering from other addictions because overwork is rewarded in almost every level of society, especially in corporate America. Work addiction destroys relationships and it kills people. Amid praise and cheers, marriages break, friendships dissolve, work effectiveness ebbs. Physical side effects and health problems appear. No one, least of all the compulsive worker, understands what went wrong. Amidst their crumbling world, work addicts drown their sorrows by rolling up their sleeves and digging their heels deeper into their jobs. And for the most part, they're praised for it. That's what you're supposed to do. We pat them on the back and say, good job, keep it up. And they're destroying themselves. For workaholics, work is more than making a living. It is life itself. They live to work. Work consumes their thoughts so that even when they're not on the job, it's still in their minds constantly. Oftentimes, they can't sleep at night because their mind is just working over what happened that day, what I could have done better, what I should have done, I shouldn't have said that, what we'll be doing tomorrow. It's all consuming. We can't shut it off. Their personhood meshes with their job. Without their job, they're nothing. They feel that to succeed is to be worthwhile, to fail is to be worthless. And the problem with this approach to work is that it ultimately does not satisfy. We are trying to make work do something it was never intended to do. to give us satisfaction and fulfillment in life. Someone who discovered this was King Solomon when he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, something you need to understand about Ecclesiastes, it's written from the perspective of an atheist. When he says under the sun, which occurs throughout the book many times, he is saying without God. So he's looking at life without God. How can I find fulfillment? And he tries everything. And understand, you know, we talk about King Midas having the golden touch. King Solomon had it. Everything he did, he succeeded in. He was the wisest, smartest, the richest man. He had it all. And in the book of Ecclesiastes, he documents this search for meaning without God. Notice what he says in chapter 2 of that book, beginning in verse 4. He writes, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself, the treasures of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers and a harem as well, the delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Now, if he was to stop right there, and he was giving a report maybe to a corporate group of executives, they'd probably all stand up and applaud and cheer and say, way to go! You made it! You did it! I want to be like you! I think most Americans would say that. This is the American dream. He's a success. He worked hard, and now he's enjoying the fruits of his labor. But listen to how he concludes. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. Say, you got to be kidding me, Solomon. You've got it all. Who could ask for anything more than what you have achieved? In verse 17, he says, I hated life. Can you imagine that? Here's a guy that has it all, and he says, I hate my life. It's meaningless. Why? Because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And it's all because at some point he dies and he has to leave it all behind. All of the awards that you win, all of the material possessions you can amass through the success of your work, one day you're going to leave it all behind. And somebody else is going to get it. They might only pay 29 cents at the thrift store for it, but somebody's going to get it, right? We end up leaving it all behind. He ends this section in verse 23. What does a man get for all the toil and anxious striving with which he labors under the sun? All his days his work is pain and grief. Even at night his mind does not rest. Boy, doesn't that sound like the American dream? Maybe we should call it the American nightmare. You work and you work and you work and you work. And you never seem to get ahead. You lay down your head at night. Your body is physically exhausted, but your mind can't shut it down. We've missed the boat. We've tried to make work do something it was never intended to be. Legendary football coach Vince Lombardi has said, fatigue makes cowards of us all. And physical exhaustion does alter our emotional state. What we could handle when we're fresh, we're no longer able to do. Difficulties that we first faced like a problem solver full of faith, now causes us to buckle at the knees. The challenges that once energized us now terrify us. We're not up to the task. Why? Because we've worn ourselves down to nothing. The real problem is really physical, but it has emotional manifestations. When we're worn out, we often use the phrase, "I'm so tired of whatever." Tired of problems, tired of pressure, tired of deadlines, tired of criticism, tired of working 6 or 7 days a week, tired of difficult people, tired of having everything depend on me, tired of being at the same place and doing the same thing, tired of other people letting me down. Now, what we usually focus on is at the end of the phrase, but what we should be focusing on is the first words, "I'm so tired," because that's really where it's coming from. If left unchecked, work can steal everything precious from our lives. It steals our minds. We can't focus on anything else. It steals our presence. We miss the important times to be with our family. It steals our identity. We become our job. It steals our significance. We're like a machine. Our purpose in life is to do nothing but work. Ultimately, it will steal our health. The enormous stress wears down our bodies. It steals our priorities. Achievement becomes our God. And it steals our energy because we have nothing left to give to the important people in our lives. Overwork, fatigue, even to the point of exhaustion, it's a serious stress fracture in the lives of many, including Christians. But fortunately, there is an answer. There is a prescription for workaholism, and it's found right in Scripture. I think we need to do three things. We need to reevaluate our perspectives. We need to rearrange our priorities. And we need to reorganize our practices. First, let's reevaluate our perspectives. Why are we working so hard? Are we trying to prove to others our worth? Maybe we're trying to prove it to ourselves. Maybe we're so caught up in the materialistic rat race that we're trying to keep up with the Joneses and the Smiths and everybody else down the block. Have we been convinced that fatigue is next to godliness, that it's better to wear out than rust out? It's easy to believe that we have to work ourselves to the bone to prove our worth or to make sure the job gets done right. For men in particular, I think it plays into our pride. You get two guys that first get to meet each other, and I guarantee you within the first minute or two, they're going to be talking about what they do for a living. That's usually the first thing out of our mouths. Why? Because that's who I am. No, it's not. You are more than what you do for a living. You are more than your job. And even if you're in Christian service, you are still more than your ministry. You are a person created in the image of God for whom Christ died. That makes you infinitely valuable. And where this becomes so important is if something were to happen that you can't work anymore. If your health fails, maybe something outside of your control ends your job, ends your ability to be productive in society. Now you feel worthless. And I believe this is why, tragically, so many whose careers are ended either prematurely because of the economy or because of their own health, because of what somebody else has done, or even retirement. They often end their own lives because they feel that they're no longer worth anything. If I don't accomplish anything, I'm not worth anything. That is not biblical. That is not what God created us to be. We need to reevaluate our perspectives. Solomon writes about this in Psalm 127. Unless the Lord builds a house, the work of the workers is wasted. Unless the Lord protects a city, guarding it with sentries will do no good. It is useless for you to work so hard from early morning till late at night, anxiously working for food to eat, for God gives rest to those he loves. We tend to think that it's all up to us, and if I don't do it, it won't get done. If I don't do it, it's not going to happen. God says, excuse me, let me introduce myself. I'm still at work in this world, and I'd like to be at work in your life, if you'll let me. Now, I'm not suggesting that we don't work at all. I am suggesting that it's not all of who we are, and it's not all up to us. Let God be God. And we need to revisit this idea that our spirituality is measured by our exhaustion. Busyness is not a Christian virtue. Spiritual maturity is not measured by the amount of work we do, no matter how busy we are or how much we get done. There's more to the Christian life than increasing its speed. Trying to do more and more and more. In fact, God designed us to take a break. He set the example himself. He worked for 6 days in creation and then took a day off. He rested. In fact, that's the same word you find in Psalm 46:10. Be still and know that I am God. On the seventh day, God was still. He ceased. He stopped. And he enjoyed what he had done. And then he said to his people, I want you to do the same. I want you to take a day of rest. Stop your work and rest. Restore yourselves. I believe work in balance with physical rest is a life in sync with God's design. He invites us not only to physical rest, but to emotional rest and spiritual rest. Now, I know it's popular these days to debunk the idea of the Sabbath. Oh, that's the Old Testament. That's the law. We're under grace. We don't need that. Sabbath doesn't appear in the New Testament, so we don't have to do it anymore. Really? Why don't we just tear the Old Testament out and throw it away, if that's our attitude? And the Sabbath does appear in the New Testament. Last time I knew, the book of Hebrews was in the New Testament. And in Hebrews chapter 4, verses 9 and 10, it says, there remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from his own work, just as God rested from his. Now, I realize not everybody can take Saturday or Sunday off as their day of rest. Their work schedule may not permit it. And that's okay. But we need to take some time and stop, do what we're always doing. Regardless of how good it is, we have to take a break. Don't think of leisure time as wasted time. Think of it as time invested so that you're more productive when you do go back to work. Because that is exactly how God designed us to be. We may also need to rearrange our priorities. Jesus warned in Luke 12:15, watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Maybe the reason why we work ourselves to the bone is because our lifestyle demands that we work and work and work and work and maybe work two or three jobs in order to feed this lifestyle. Well, what's it all about? Is it about getting a bigger house and a newer car and a bigger boat or the newer this, that, and the other thing? Is that what life is all about? Remember what Solomon said, you're going to leave it all behind. Don't get too caught up in the stuff of this world, because one day we're going to leave it behind. Paul says in 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 10, godliness with contentment is great gain. We've brought nothing into the world, we'll take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. That verse is often misquoted. Money is not the root of all evil. The love of it is. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Simply being content might take a lot of the pressure off of us. We can find that we have the ability to rest and relax and enjoy the things we do have. And then finally, let's reorganize our practices. We need to see the necessity of taking a rest, getting away from the normal work routine to be refreshed. Jesus said in Mark 6 to his disciples, after he had sent them out on a great ministry opportunity, and they reported back success, he said, "Let's come aside and take a rest." Vance Havner used to say, "If we don't come apart and rest, we'll just come apart." And that's true. Leisure is more than idle time. Some of the most valuable work done in the world has been done at leisure and never paid for in cash. See, leisure is doing what you want to do. Work is doing what you have to do, right? Work is doing what the boss tells you to do. Leisure is doing what you want to do. And we need that change. We need that break. Interestingly, the word leisure comes from a Latin word that means to permit, to allow. And in order for leisure to happen, we need to allow ourselves to rest. Allow ourselves to take a break from our work. Now, the bottom line in all this is actually doing it. We can nod in agreement till our head turns blue, but the greatest need is not inclination, it's demonstration. So here's two suggestions. Deliberately stop being absorbed with the endless details of life. Quit trying to control everything, and we're going to come to that in a later message in this series. But understand that the whole world doesn't revolve around you. If you don't do it, someone else will, or it doesn't need to be done. Allow yourself that opportunity to stop. And then consciously start taking time for leisure. Schedule it. Put it on your calendar. And when somebody calls you and says, "Can you do such and so on this?" do you say, "I'm sorry, my calendar won't allow it"? You don't have to tell them what you're doing. It's none of their business. But make sure that you schedule it. Guard it. Because you need it. Take a break. We're supposed to be like God, and God took a break. It may not only make our life longer in the process, but we're going to enjoy it more while we're here. And ultimately, we will be more effective for God if we are rested and restored on a regular basis.